going through a series on the book of Ruth, and we're up to chapter 3. And each week we've been sort of saying how this story builds and builds and builds. And just because I know that some people kind of come and go, and some of you might have been here for all of it, some might have not been here for any of it. We're just going to watch a little video that just recaps the first two chapters of Ruth. It's a great story, so tune in. Great. So that is where we've got to. And if you've got your Bibles, turn to Ruth chapter 3. If you're using the Bibles in the back of the chairs, it's on page 269. We're not going to read it all the way through. We're going to jump in and out this evening as we look at it. So we find the start of this book of Ruth, as Liz and Sally and Michelle have looked at, is really quite a sad beginning, quite a dark beginning, especially for Naomi and for Ruth and for Orpah. All their husbands have died, and as we saw in the video, Naomi, the mother-in-law, gives herself this name, Mara, which means bitter. Can you imagine doing that? You know, if England had lost tonight, I might have been changed. Mara Massey might have been my name. But you know, she's taking on that identity. But what we find at the start of chapter 3 is this bitterness is now turning into hope. All the bitterness and sadness of chapters 1 and 2 are now turning into hope. And that's what God does, doesn't he? If you're someone who knows God tonight, if you're somebody who's got a relationship with God, this is one of the things that we find as Christians, this is one of the things that we find as people who are disciples of Jesus, that often what can be really difficult, God starts to turn round and bring hope in those situations. If you're living in Ruth chapter 1 and 2 at the moment, chapter 3 is coming. Yeah? Hope is coming. In fact, we find this with Naomi, that she's so full of hope now that she starts to make plans. You see, in chapters 1 and 2, actually, all the plans are off. They'd moved to another country. She'd had to return back because it had gone badly. She's changed her name to bitterness. But suddenly, we find herself making plans. And it's a risky plan because she's seen that Boaz has taken a shine to Ruth. And she starts to think, what can we do to get Boaz to notice you? This is the plan to snare Boaz as a husband for Ruth. This is what it says in verses 1 to 6 of chapter 3. One day, Ruth's mother-in-law, Naomi, said to her, "My daughter, I must find you a home for you where you will be well provided for. Now Boaz, with whose women you have worked, is a relative of ours. Tonight he will be winnowing barley on the threshing floor. Wash, put on perfume, and get dressed in your best clothes. Then go down to the threshing floor, but don't let him know that you are there until he has finished eating and drinking. When he lies down, note the place where he is lying. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down. He will tell you what to do." "I will do whatever you say," Ruth answered. So she went down to the threshing floor and did everything her mother-in-law had told her to do. This is a risky plan. This is a high risk plan. See, she says to Ruth, "What I want you to do, I want you to stop wearing your widow's clothes." You see, in this culture at this time, in fact, in some cultures today, if a husband dies, if a wife dies, you kind of dress to show that. She's been dressing in these dark kind of dowdy kind of clothes. No makeup, not really worrying about what she looks like to show just how grieving she is. Naomi, her mother-in-law, says, "Look, get your best dress out. Go and have a shower. Use that nice shower gel that you've got. Put on something that smells good, some perfume or whatever. And then go down to where Boaz is tonight. He's threshing. They've been doing the barley harvest. Go down to where he is and show him that you're available. Show him that you're available to become his wife." So she does just that. She goes down to Boaz's farm, into the field. He's had a good meal. He's had a few drinks. He's feeling comfortable. He's got all his barley harvest there. And what they would do in this days is rather than kind of leaving it in the field, It could get stolen. You'd stay with your harvest for the night. So he's starting to fall asleep on his crop. He's protecting it. It's dark. It's night time. The stars are starting to come out. And Ruth approaches him. She cuddles up at his feet. He wakes up, startled. Have a look at the next bit of the story. When Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, he went over to lie down at the far end of the grain pile. Ruth approached quietly, uncovered his feet and lay down. In the middle of the night, something startled the man. You bet it did. He turned and there was a woman lying at his feet. "Who are you?" he asked. "I am your servant, Ruth," she said. "Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a guardian redeemer of our family." "I want you," she says, "I want you to redeem our family. I want you to marry me." This was the culture in those days. If a man died, another man in the family would be obliged to take on the lady. She's saying, "I want you to do this." This could have gone badly wrong. This is a plan of huge risk, isn't it? A woman going out on her own at night across the fields. It wasn't the done thing. It wasn't the done thing for a Moabite woman. She was part of the enemy. The Moabs were enemies of Israel. A woman who's from Moab going out at night on her own is highly risky. In fact, the only women really who would have gone around at night would have been prostitutes. They would have been frowned upon. Your whole reputation would have gone. Boaz could have humiliated her. "Get out! What are you doing?" Called all the other guys. "Get this woman out of here." Her whole reputation could have been gone like that. But here's the thing. This is our first point tonight, is that sometimes God asks us to do risky things. Sometimes, should we put that up, Matt? Sometimes God asks us to do risky things. Now, it's an interesting thing that God does this, because most of our default positions is to avoid risk. Most of our defaults is actually to lean towards safety. I can prove this. How many of you have taken out an insurance policy? Ever? Yeah, on a mobile phone, on a house, on a car. Why do we do that? To protect ourselves, just in case. We kind of default towards safety, to what we know. We default to what we've always done. But you know, the truth is, something that I've found over recent years is this, is that Christians should be the biggest risk takers in the world. For a follower of Jesus, we should be the biggest risk takers in the world. Here's a question, just to turn to the person next to you or someone around you. Why does risk exist? Why does it exist? It's a good question, isn't it? Okay, that's a big question. I've not really given you long enough for that. Anybody want to call anything out? What things did you talk about? Why does risk exist? Just shout some answers out. Because we... You wouldn't move forward. Yeah, there's a truth in that, isn't there? Most steps we take, there's a little bit of risk. We literally wouldn't move forward without risk. Good, I like that. Why else? For a challenge. Excitement. Three in a row there. You can tell where they were at, can't you? Challenge, excitement. We just want to move forward. Come on. I like that. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I wonder if you thought about any of these. You know, risks exist. I mean, simply risk in itself exists because we don't know what will happen next. Essentially, that's why risk is, because none of us can tell the future. None of us can tell what's going to happen in a minute, in 30 seconds time, let alone the next year, the next thing. Risks exist because our lives, by their very nature, are uncertain. Says this in the book of James. James was Jesus' brother. And he wrote these words. He says, "You don't know the first thing about tomorrow. You're nothing but a wisp of fog catching a brief bit of sun before disappearing." Yeah, our lives are like, we just don't know. We think it's certain, and we surround ourselves with insurance policies and bank accounts and homes and people and all this sort of stuff to try and make ourselves think that we're certain. It's not. Risk exists because it's built into the fabric of life, into creation. We can try and run away from it. You can't. It's there. And it's, do you know what? God has designed life with risk in it. God has designed life this way so that we learn to trust him. Risk exists so we learn to trust God. Risk is there. It's not something to run away from. Actually, risk is something to embrace. Risk is something to say, do you know what? I can learn. I can grow. It's a challenge. I can move forward. Because I can learn to trust God more. We're never assured of the outcome. But we can be assured of who is with us as we start to take steps forward, as we start to take risks. Naomi and Ruth chose to seize a moment. This could change everything if you can marry Boaz. It's a huge risk. They decided to take it because they knew that God was in it, that he was starting to prompt them. And there are moments in my life, there are moments in your life. There are some of us sitting here tonight, right now, who are on the brink of a decision, the brink of doing something, and we've been holding back. It might be risky. What if it all goes wrong? Maybe God's saying tonight, I want you to move forward. I want you to take a risk, to learn a little bit from Naomi and Ruth. But this is the second thing. You see, they didn't just walk into this situation blindly. What they had done, and what we'll see that they had done, is that they had discerned what God's plan might be. And this is the second thing tonight. The risk involves discerning the plans of God. See, they'd looked at the situation, Ruth and Naomi. They'd picked up clues along the way about who Boaz was, about his character, about the kind of man he was, about what God might be doing. And all along, they'd started to see that God's plan was in this. You know, when Michelle spoke a couple of weeks ago, one of the phrases she focused on was this, that it just so happened. It just so happened. It's a great phrase. Thinking on the NIV, it says in verse 9 of chapter 2, it says, as it turned out. It's a lovely turn of phrase. You know, as it turned out, it just so happened that Ruth goes to work in Boaz's field. She could have gone and worked in any fields around Bethlehem. I went to Bethlehem earlier on this year. It's surrounded by fields and farmland. She could have gone anywhere. It just so happened she went to work in Boaz's field. It just so happened that he was a member of Naomi's family. It just so happened that Boaz starts to take care of Ruth, starts to look out for her, protects her, shows her how to harvest the best barley. It's not a coincidence. And you can imagine Ruth and Naomi kind of chatting at night and kind of going, this isn't a coincidence. God's hand is at work. God is at work in these moments, these just so happened moments of life. It happened to Ruth and Naomi. It happens to us as well. And when we spot those moments, and when we choose to say, do you know what? This isn't just a coincidence. I think God's at work. It makes it possible to take risks. You know, if you've ever been to a circus, or if you've ever been to see gymnastics and that sort of stuff, you know, you'll see people doing the high rope, you know, the tight rope, and being miles and miles and miles up seemingly, you know, and walking out. And you know, they'll take those steps, won't they? Out on that tightrope. What makes it possible, do you think, for them to do that? Courage. What else? Practice. confidence. Yeah, this isn't the first time that they've weighed it up, haven't they? And they kind of gone, do you know what? I'm going to give this a go. I'm going to practice, and they'll practice low down to start with, won't they? And it'll get higher and higher. And they'll practice and practice and practice. And then when they get up that high, what's underneath them? Safety net. A safety net. Yeah? Because actually, at the end of the day, they're going, yeah, I'm willing to take this risk, but I want there to be something underneath me. And you know, these just so happen moments that God brings across our path, these as it turned out moments, it was like this safety net underneath of God saying, do you know what? As we build this picture of the situation, saying, I've got you. I've got you. There's a great passage in Scripture that talks about underneath are the Lord's everlasting arms. Now this picture of God almost ready to catch us. And he says to us, I'm going to put these things in place. And it'll be like it just so happened. It just so happened. I look back on my life. I don't know if you can do this in yours. I look back on my life and there are so many it just so happened moments. You know, where I happen to meet someone. Or I happen to get somewhere at a certain time. And you think, do you know what? God's in this. And when we spot that, it makes it possible to take risks. You know, there's a beautiful moment in this story that just shows us in detail just how much God was at work. In verse 9 of chapter 3, when Ruth is talking to Boaz, when she first comes across him, he says, who are you? And she says, I'm your servant Ruth, she said. Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a guardian redeemer of our family. Now, there's lots of debate about this, what goes on in the book of Ruth here. And you might have heard people say that this bit where she uncovers his feet, you know, is a bit nudge, nudge, wink, wink, and we really know what's going on there and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, I've been looking at it this week and doing some study, and this word where it says, spread the corner of your garment over me. A better translation of that word garment, a lot of writers, a lot of theologians say this, better translation of that word garment is your wings. Okay, spread your wings over me. And, you know, this phrase about spreading your wings, the way they've got this in the Hebrew it's written in, is that this phrase appears quite a lot in the Old Testament, referring to God's relationship with Israel. And so often it will say about God and Israel, say that he spread his wings over them. Psalmist writes this a lot, and other people in the Old Testament write this when they're quoting, that God spreads his wings over his people. And what he's saying there in doing that is that Israel are his. You know, just like a mother bird will spread its wings over its chick and kind of protect, they're mine, back off. You know, it's almost like God's doing that to Israel. It's a promise of his as well, saying, I've got you. No harm is going to come on you. And it's interesting because in Ruth chapter 2, verse 12, when Boaz first meets Ruth, he says to her that she has taken protection. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel. And he says this, that under whose wings you have come to take refuge. You see, already in the story, Boaz has used this phrase. He said, you're taking protection under the wings of God. You're one of his. She was a Moabite, remember this. And so he's saying to her, you've become one of God's. You're under his wings. You're protected now. And so a chapter later, when Ruth goes down to the threshing floor, and when she cuddles up next to Boaz, she says to him this, she says, would you cover me with your wings? And she's already heard him say it once. And it's almost like Ruth is saying, look, you get this. You get what God's like, Boaz. You get that he covers Israel. He covers his people with his wings. And so she's saying to him, would you do the same? Would you be like God to me? Would you cover me with your wings? Would you protect me? Would you care for me? Would you make a promise to me, just like God does to Israel? It's a beautiful thing. I wish they hadn't translated it as garment. Because it's just, when you read it like that, you think, wow, there's such depth in this. This isn't just a fluky moment that happens to go well for Ruth and Naomi. Yeah, they've taken a huge risk, but they've discerned that God is at work. They've discerned the character of Boaz. He gets what God is like. God covers us with his wings. Go and ask Boaz to do the same. He's a man after God's heart. He will do it. Yeah. It's to do with the... As well, it's to do with prayer shawl as well. Like the wings. Wonderful. Yeah. So it's like those wings. It's a covering of God clearly saying... She's saying that I want to marry you. I want you to marry me. So God sometimes asks us to do risky things, but within that risk, it involves discerning the plans of God. So just some final thoughts on this chapter, and then we're going to sing together, and we're going to allow God to speak to us, and then we're going to have a chance to respond to him. So, Ruth has gone down to find Boaz, and they're having a bit of a moment. And you can imagine the kind of the romance of this situation, can't you? Boaz has kind of woken up, startled, and Ruth has explained, I want you to put your wings over me. I want you to promise to me. I want you to protect me. And it's an incredible moment. But within that, Boaz is absolutely honourable. The way that Boaz behaves is completely honourable. He says, I'm going to commit to you. But he wants to do it right. And what we find out in verses 12 and 13 is that he says, although I am it's true that I am your guardian redeemer, there is another man who is more closely related than I am. Stay here for the night, he says, and in the morning, if he wants to do his duty as your guardian redeemer, good, let him redeem you. You know, he's kind of looked at Naomi, I'm sorry, he's looked at Ruth and he said, you know what, you could have gone for a younger model. He explains, he says, you haven't gone for the younger guys, but you've come to me. And, you can imagine him thinking, I can't believe this. You know, this younger woman, she wants me, she wants to marry me, this is great. But then he thinks, I've got to do the honourable thing. And he says, you know, there's another guy in the family who actually should be first in line to look after you, for you to marry. And he says, you know, stay for the night. He says, don't go out now, because he, you know, he realizes it's dangerous. Anything could happen. But he says, stay, and we'll sneak you out in the morning. He says, before it gets too light, before anybody can recognize you, we'll make sure that you can go out, so you can go out safely. Boaz is a good, good man. And let's just think this through a little bit as well. Boaz has had a good meal. He's had a drink. He's got this woman who he's attracted to, and she smells good. she's offering herself to him. The stars are out. Barry White is playing. It's a moment. It would have been so easy for Boaz to take advantage. But Boaz chooses to wait. He chooses the pure route. He chooses holiness. When everything in him and all the atmosphere says, go for it. He chooses holiness. And this is just the last thought I've got. And it's this, that risk and holiness go hand in hand. You know, I think sometimes we can kill ourselves and we can say, do you know what? God's calling me out to take these risks. He's calling me to step out. And, you know, it's going to be a bit on the edge there. And kind of as long as I do what God wants, it kind of how I get there doesn't really matter. But this makes it clear that God wants us to pursue holiness and purity. You know, God's plan for sex and for these kind of relationships is for marriage. Two people who love each other, who are committed to each other for life. But just like Boaz did, we can find ourselves in these risky situations, these situations that are tempting. You know, God will bring people into our lives who we're attracted to. Whether we're married or not, he brings people in our lives who we're attracted to. And there will be those intense moments, just like Boaz and Ruth find themselves in. If it's not a situation like this, there'll be other situations where our holiness can be compromised, where we're tempted to kind of step off the path and to choose other things. Maybe the temptation, you know, a party or whether to drink too much, and we think, do you know what? It doesn't matter, it's a party, it's fine. Or to smoke or to take something else for that buzz, and we think, do you know what? It's all right, it's just for tonight, it doesn't really matter. To watch something, to click on something online, and we think, do you know what? It's just in this moment. It doesn't matter. But I love this story of Boaz because he shows us how to make a good decision. For us men, he shows us how to make good and wise decisions. Ladies, he shows you as well how to make good and wise decisions. What does he do? He chooses to wait. He chooses to wait. In this situation, it was a choice to wait until they were married. But I think that choice to wait and to pause is a good one. I've found in my life so many things that I'm tempted to do and to engage in. Actually, to stop. And to go, is this good? Is this a wise decision? So many things that we're tempted to do are just in the moment, aren't they? We get caught up. And actually just to stop and to breathe and to take stock is a good thing to do. He chooses to wait. And you know what? The fact that Boaz chooses to wait means something incredible for you and for me. I'm not going to go into too much detail because Liz is preaching next week and she's going to be preaching on chapter 4, which shows the full implications for that. But Ruth and Boaz do get married and their family line has profound implications for the whole of eternity. The fact that he waited is incredible because God honours his decision to wait. And when you and I decide to wait, when you and I decide to push the pause button on whatever it is, whether it's a situation like this where we're sexually tempted or something like that, when we choose to go, I'm going to wait, I don't know if this is the right thing, God will honour your decision too. Just as he did to Ruth and Boaz. Now the truth is that often we don't choose to wait on a lot of stuff, and the truth is we do give in to temptation on so many things. And you know, if we've done that, if we've blown it, if we've given in to temptation in any way, that isn't where the story has to end. We can often beat ourselves up about that stuff and kind of get down on ourselves when we give in. Whether say it's with sex or anything like that. But our story doesn't have to finish there. Our story can finish with the grace and the forgiveness of God. There's a great Psalm 130. It says this. It says, if you, God, kept records of wrongdoings, who would stand a chance? But as it turns out, forgiveness is your habit, and that's why you're worshipped. some of the greatest verses in the Bible. Yeah, if you're looking to memorize something, you can go far wrong with that one. It's great. The truth is, we do get things wrong. The truth is, we do give in to temptations. The truth is, we do blow it. And the idea that God's keeping a record of wrongdoings is a horrendous one. The idea that God is there writing down everything that you've done and going, do you know what? Time you go pay for it. Who would stand a chance? But look, as it turns out, forgiveness is your habit. And that's why you're worshipped. You see, God does keep a record of our wrongdoing, but it's been paid for by the blood of Jesus Christ. It's been paid for. It's been wiped clean. And when we realize that, and when we know that, it means that suddenly we can turn to God and know his forgiveness and his grace. I love this idea that he's in the habit of forgiveness. What does, if someone's in the habit of doing something, what does that mean? They do it often. They do it often. It's a default. You know, and it's a wonderful idea that when we come to God and we say, oh man, I've blown it. Oh man, I've got it wrong. That God goes, do you know what? Because of Jesus, you're forgiven. Because of Jesus, you're forgiven. And that makes us want to worship. You see, God will often bring conviction in our lives. And he'll often go, do you know what? I want to put my finger on something. But he doesn't condemn. He doesn't condemn. You know, earlier on today, I went home after church and settled down to watch the cricket. And I've got a good wife, so she brought me lunch in front of the cricket, which is good. And I was there eating my lunch, watching the cricket, and finished my lunch, and quite a lot of it had spilt down my top. We had these wonderful kebabs from the butcher, and they're lovely, but they're greasy. And it kind of just went down my top, and my nice shirt, and I was like, oh no. I had to go in the wash. You know, condemnation says, you know, you spilt something down the top, you've got to throw it away. You got to throw it away. That's the end of it. Conviction says it can be cleaned. Yeah, it's dirty, but it can be cleaned. And that's what God does in our lives. You know, we mess up, we screw up, and he'll sometimes go, ah, do you know what? You've messed up there. It's all down your front. He says, put it in the wash. Forgiveness is my habit. Condemnation says, ah, you're useless, you're rubbish. You're never coming back from this. God's in the business of conviction, but he's also in the business of forgiveness as well. If you're in a situation where you've blown it, come back to God. Come to God and find that conviction, but find that forgiveness as well. If you're in a situation that's full of temptation, choose to be like Boaz. Choose to be like Ruth. Wait. Step away, push the pause button and wait. What's the story of Ruth chapter 3? I think it's this, that sometimes God will ask us to take a risk. I wonder if that's you tonight. In the moment we're going to respond. I wonder if it's you, one of your response tonight is to step out and say, hey, I'm going to take that risk. Maybe it's that actually, you know, you've got to discern God's plans for that. Maybe you start tonight and say, God, where are you at work in this? Where are you ready at work? I want to take a risk. I want to step out. What are your plans for me? You can ask him tonight. Maybe it's seeking that forgiveness tonight. Or maybe it's seeking that strength to make Boaz-like decisions that are good and are right and are strong. Paul and the band are going to come back and we're going to take some time to sing. Before we do that, let's just have a moment's quiet. And just in the silence, just maybe recognize what God is saying to you tonight. Which of those things is it? A risk you've got to take? Something you need to discern of God? Or that forgiveness and strength?